Right now, we are going through the Ten Commandments. If you'll remember the Ten Commandments that we began in Exodus, the 20th chapter, we've kind of used a visual for each of those, and so you can probably kind of guess what I'm doing here slightly, or at least you're wondering what I'm doing here. But the issue of the Ten Commandments, you start off with the first one, and we had a door, because ultimately the Ten Commandments are not the door to the Lord. The door to the Lord had to do with a previous statement, a previous trust factor the nation of Israel had done. And we talked about that and how the Ten Commandments, they are not the path to heaven. You don't look at the Ten Commandments and say, wow, that's God's final. And so if I can just score a 75 on the Ten Commandments, I got a good chance at heaven. Man, if I could get an 80, a 60, a 90, I mean, man, does he grade on the curve on the Ten Commandments? Because if he does, I'm really good on one or two, but there's some others that are pretty bad for me. And we talked about how the Ten Commandments are given not as the road to heaven. They're given to God's kids, already the ones that are his. The Ten Commandments are his act of love. And you're already in with God. You've already gone through the door long before you come to the Ten Commandments. And the idea of the Ten Commandments, so we use the door kind of for that one. The second week, we used kind of the backpack idea. Don't make any graven images. Don't you try to reduce me down. Don't try to minimize me. Don't put me in a single place. Don't put me where you can unzip me out of your backpack and bring me in and take me back. And so we kind of used that one. Last week, we used a third visual. The third visual is on the third commandment, which is, don't you be vandalizing my name. Don't you be spray painting my name on things I don't want my name on. And don't you take your own private agenda and just spray God all over it in some way to try to sanctify it. Don't use my name. Misuse my name. And today, we are on the fourth commandment. Would you turn to Exodus, the 20th chapter? I want to comment that the first three have all been negative in how they're stated. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt not. Today, we're on the first one that's a positive. It's an action. It's something that you can write down, get your pencils out. You can get up and walk out of here and say, I know what God told me to do. I can get up. I'm one of God's kids, and so I know what God wants his kids to do. I can do this. Here it is. Exodus chapter 20, starting in the 8th verse. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. You got an alien within your gates, he's not to work either that day. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that's in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. If I just say, wow, you got to love a God whose first positive command is take a day off. I mean, really, that's what he says. I mean, what kind of a God would say, here's my first command, take a day off? You're kidding. In fact, your first comment almost really is, this is a joke, isn't it? I mean, God, you just threw this in to see if we're really reading. You thought we might be just kind of skimming down, and so you threw this one in. You're not serious. I mean, there's stuff about, I mean, murder and adultery and drugs and alcohol and all those important things you could talk about, and you make the fourth command, take a day off. God, how did you exactly draw up what made the cut on these 10? I mean, if you had 30 commands, I could understand number 28 being take a day off. But how did you make the fourth one to be take a day off? Surely you're kidding. And if you're not kidding, then God, it's unrealistic. It's unrealistic. Think who he gave this to. He gave the command to a group of people who had been slaves their whole life. What's the schedule of a slave? Well, the answer basically is 24/7. How long have they been slaves? Their entire memory. For 400 years, at some level, it had turned in the early years to slavery. How long has our nation been in existence? A couple hundred years? Twice as long as our nation's been, they've been slaves. So the whole culture's built around the idea that you get up and you go to work today. You work because you have to live. If you want to die, you stop working. And even if you had a benevolent master who said, here, take a day off. You can't take a day off. You got to go home and put a roof on your own house. You got to change oil on your own chariot. You got to do all kinds of stuff. You got to put shoes on the horses. I mean, you've got to go do all, I mean, this, what? Do you not understand the pace we live at? God, this is an unrealistic thing. Take a day off. I don't understand that. And quite frankly, God, it's a little demeaning. Because you're kind of taunting us with something we can't. There's no refrigeration. There are no fast food restaurants. You catch it, you clean it, you eat it today. You don't catch it, you haven't got today. God, we live hand to mouth. We just barely get by. We're scraping by our fingertips, and you tell us to take a day off. This is one of those religious things you study in church that has absolutely no significance outside the doors. It's a really nice theory to have, but it doesn't work in real life. Admit it. You're thinking in those terms too. They certainly would have. What is this command? And why does God state it as the first positive command? And why does he make it number four? I want you to notice that the verses that explain it don't start off as some kind of apology. The next set of verses go, oh, God, going, what was I thinking? Of course you can't take a day off. I'm so sorry. In fact, if anything, the next set of verses, he uses the most words that he will use in the entire series to stand firmly behind this command. This is my command. Build your life around the pattern of 6 days of work and 1 day of rest. This is my command. This is how you use your time. The sun has a rhythm. It goes up and it goes down. The moon has a rhythm. It does this. The tides have a rhythm. They come in and out. The seasons have a rhythm. And if you're my children and I love you as my children, you'll have a rhythm. Your rhythm is you'll work hard for 6 days. And you'll rest hard for a seventh. That's my loving command to my children. Work hard, rest hard. There's a lot of things we could say about why, and as we sort of break this out, but we're going to concentrate on two reasons that he gives for why that I think are in this text. The first one is pretty obvious. He states in this that why does he want me to have a 1 day a week, that a 24-hour period that I rest hard? Why does he have this Sabbath idea? And by the way, that very word Sabbath was originally a verb, and now it's moved into a noun form. And so what it basically says is this is what you are to do. Where you used to have the word to work or to not work, which is the verb, it uses it to the noun. This is your day. Don't work. Why? Here's what he says. This day off is to the Lord. That's reason number one. To the Lord. Something spiritual is going on here, and they had probably a better context for understanding that than we might. Let me give a little background that they would have understood this in. Approximately 2 million people would have been coming out of Egypt when they came. Well, we don't know the exact numbers, obviously, but 2 million people. They packed up, they loaded up. First of all, they're slaves. They don't have a lot to bring anyhow. Now, the Egyptians gave them some things, and God's hand was in that. But when they came, how much can you pack for a three-month trip, which is how long they've been on the road so far now? How much can you pack for this 90 days? Well, the answer is very little food. So what's one of the first things you're going to run out of? The answer is food. So what did they do when they ran out of food? Well, immediately, they did the same thing that many of us would have also struggled the same way, especially people who had too low a view of God. And so the first thing that they did is they began to murmur and cry out and groan and say, God, you brought us out in the desert. At least we could have died back in Egypt with some food on the table. You brought us out here to die. And they're upset about the lack of the food. God responds in a couple of ways, but the one that I want to comment on is God says, I will provide for you. In the morning when you go out, I want you to recognize, and he begins to describe how God began to provide something. When the dew was lifted from the ground in the morning, there was a little something that looked like a wafer. When you tasted it, it tasted like a wafer with honey on it. And he said, basically says, there's going to be enough, and I will give you so that you have two quarts for every person every morning. I want you to go every morning, and I will provide for you. We're in this together, you and I. It's not just you on this trip by yourself. It's you and me together. Never, never forget it's you and me together. Please understand that. Never forget it's you and me together. If you ever forget it's you and me together, you're going to really struggle. I will provide for you. And so they got up the next morning, and sure enough, there's the wafers on the ground, and they pick them up. And they eat them, and their substance came from what God provided in the morning. Now, here's the instructions. This, by the way, is back in Exodus 16th chapter. Here's the instructions. Every day you're to gather them, but only gather enough for that day. Don't save any. Don't save any. Well, some people thought, you know, man, it's here. We didn't have anything yesterday, today, and so they saved it. And the next morning, on Tuesday morning, whatever morning it was, they got up to what they'd saved, and it was full of maggots, and it stank. Man, nothing to make you lose your appetite any quicker than that, and they threw it out. God said, see, I said, take only enough for the day. But on Friday, the day before the seventh day, their Sabbath, on Friday, here's what he said. I want you to take 2 days worth on Friday. On Friday, get twice as much as you normally get. Hey, we're not going to do that. Man, this thing turns rot. I mean, you rancid. We learned our lesson. No. I'm telling you, I will provide for you 7 days of sustenance, and I will do it in 6 days. Trust me. I will give you 7 days of sustenance, and I will do it in 6 days. So on the sixth day, get twice as much. All right, but I ain't looking forward to breakfast. They got up the next morning, and it is perfect. It is preserved as if it were new. And for 40 years, every morning, except for the seventh morning, God provided, and God provided, and God provided. And the lesson that God drove into those people over and over and over again is never forget we're in this together, and I will provide with you. And I will provide 7 days of substance in 6 days of labor. You see, I want you to trust me. I want you to live a life with a recognition of who I am. I want you to build every part of your life. I want you to build your calendar. I want you to build every rhythm that you build. I want everything about your week to build around this concept. This is your reminder that you have a faithful God. I have a faithful God who will look after me. I will work hard and I will labor, but He is my source. He is my hope. He is my provider. And God says, you can trust me. I will give you 7 days provision in 6 days. Boy, that was hard for them. They struggled with that the same way we would. In fact, history records, and even you'll read it in the Old Testament, what they would do is they did have aliens within their gates. Now, that meant foreigners is what it meant. But so what they started doing is on the day that was supposed to be the Sabbath, they had their alien go outside the gates and set up their businesses. And so the guy who sold jewelry inside would have a booth outside the gate on the Sabbath day because, well, my alien, he couldn't run it outside the gate. It also says that on the seventh day, let your animals rest. So they used to borrow each other's animals on the Sabbath day. Here, there's my barn. If you want to get my horses out and do it, you can do that. I can't use my horses, so men would exchange and use each other's horses because there's a loophole. It doesn't say anything about going to heaven on this thing either, by the way. So therefore, we found our loophole. And so they had trouble trusting the same thing. God said, you don't get it. You don't get it. We said, yeah, we get it. I get behind. Man, you don't let me work on 7 days a week, I'll get behind. God, you don't let me work 7 days a week, I won't have enough. God, you don't let me work 7 days a week, I could have more. I'm wasting what I could have. I could have more. In verse 11 in particular, he says, I don't want you to build your life around more. I want you to build your life around me. Don't you dare build your life around more. Don't you build around more activity? Don't you build it around more possessions? Don't you build your life around more of anything except me? In fact, the very fabric of creation, you don't have to start in Exodus to find this. You go back to creation. And he uses that for this text. He says, remember how God made creation. It's 6 days God labored and he made all that creation is, and which, by the way, is you. God made you. And everything God designed came to rest on the seventh day. That's what God did himself. And so his creation is to do that, and he called you to do that. This is the divine pattern. In fact, it's interesting. He says in the Ten Commandments, don't you ever make any image to God. The crazy thing is, you're the image of God. You were made in the image of God. Don't form anything out of your hands. I've already formed what's in my image. It's you. And if the image should be anything, it ought to be something that looks like God. And if God rested on seventh day, what ought you to do in your own rest? You say, but progress is important. And prosperity has nice perks. Yes, but there's something more important. Do you trust me? Do you recognize me? You might sit here, even going, Randy, you've taken quite a while just kind of to circle the wagons here. Great for them, but in fact, I might even see how it could work if everybody did it. But man, I got to compete against a world that doesn't. I have employees and cell phones and emails and plane tickets and overtime, and how would I get by without overtime? And when I'm not working, I got my own house to shingle, and I've got the front door and the oil to change. And Randy, this is a really nice theory. But I can walk out of here. In fact, I'm already looking at my watch because Sunday morning puts me late for anything else anyhow. And besides that, this is legalism. And I know from the New Testament that we don't have to obey all those Old Testament commands. So my out is, this thing is not a command that's repeated by Jesus in the New Testament, at least not in this way. So therefore, I'm going to call it legalism and I have freedom. Well, let me pick up on that. First of all, you're entirely right. This is not a salvation issue. There were some objects in the Old Testament that were signs of the covenant. Circumcision was a sign of the covenant. Sabbath keeping was a sign of the covenant. Sacrifice, sign of the covenant. There were several signs of the covenant. You need to know, in the New Testament, Jesus is the sign of the covenant. And what you do with Jesus is the central issue above everything else. There is nothing else. The sign of the covenant is Christ. I understand that. And by the way, I know from reading the New Testament, I know that on which day we have great freedom. Jesus rose on the first day of the week, and the first century church moved its pattern, and you can see that in Scripture. In fact, in the book of Colossians, Paul writes and says, don't you let anybody debate with you on which day is more holy than another. Good grief, that's a worthless debate. There isn't any. Don't you let people debate over you on all kinds of things. We have a great deal of freedom in Christ. But nothing in all Scripture has ever spoken anything against or to back away from the pattern that God made of life, which is, I made you that 6 days you work hard and one day you rest. And I live a life of trust where one day I drive a stake in the ground every single week and I say, I build my life around this stake. I know a God I partner with, who in 6 days will give me 7 days provision. And I trust him. In fact, it's interesting. You can't even separate this idea. When you were first taught to pray, what is one of the first prayers you were ever taught? Certainly, it's the Lord's Prayer. And so in the Sermon on the Mount, another, Lord, teach us to pray. And he says, our Father who art in heaven, holy is your name. Give us this day our daily bread. Everything in my life I want to revolve around this central concept as was taught throughout Scripture. This is my life. I don't know that cell phones or emails or pace of life or answering machines will ever replace that simple prayer that you live out. I trust you. I partner with you. This whole endeavor is about an us. I don't know which day you take off. I believe we have incredible freedom. I'm going to tell you right now, this is not a good day for me to take off as a general rule. You've noticed some I have, but it sure is embarrassing standing here taking that day off. I think I have incredible freedom. The book of Colossians and many other passages tell me that the which day is not to debate on. And I even understand that if the ox is in the ditch, I understand that if the pipe breaks, but I also understand the unfaithfulness of tying my ox in the ditch. And I also understand the unfaithfulness of building my life in such a manner that I do not create the us. You say, wow, but Randy, this doesn't work for the industry I'm in. I'm in the restaurant business, and boy, that's a 7-day a week. Truett Cathy, you probably know that name. Truett Cathy would say, you know, the restaurant business is a 7-day a week, but you're going to drive by Chick-fil-A after Chick-fil-A after Chick-fil-A today if you wanted to, and you're going to find that they're closed. Well, wow, you're losing 15 to 18% of your income you could have. Yeah. But Truett Cathy, and I've been in a setting where he stood there and said, but I believe that God would provide, that God would look after us, and in 6 days he would take care of all of our 7-day needs. And Chick-fil-A has successfully proven that if you decide, however you're going to do it within your world, I build my life around trust. God is trustworthy. There's a second reason I think we're told to take the day off, and this one, I don't know who you are, but it will resonate with some of you more than even what I said a minute ago. I hope for many of you the first reason would be sufficient enough, but for others, in Exodus 16, verse 29, the first part of the verse, I'm dropping back a little bit, Exodus 16, verse 29, he changes how he states the Sabbath. Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Now, the first reason for taking the day off is because it's a Sabbath to the Lord. But the second reason is the Lord has given you the Sabbath. In fact, there's an interesting phrase that Jesus uses. Jesus states something that almost sounds backwards to us. He's being accused of some misconduct related to the Sabbath, and Jesus speaks and says, you understand, don't you, that man wasn't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. What? Do you understand that taking one day and you take it in rest was God's gift to you? Do you understand it's his act of love invested in you? That concept is really, really significant. Most people here in this room work hard. Now, there's some in this room I'm pretty sure God would lean down to you and say, work. I don't mean necessarily employment work. That's not what I'm referring to. I'm just talking about sweat and learning to work hard is a gift from God. It's an acquired taste. You have to do it long enough to learn to like it, but work. And God would say to some, the struggle in your life is laziness. There'd be few some God would say that to. But most people in this room, I'm going to assume that you work hard. And we could tell your story. Wished I could. Let me just tell you mine. Mine's no different than yours in many ways, but let me tell you mine. My story is pretty simple. I have a job that I have to write a term paper and then present it every week. I have to write a term paper and present it sometimes 2 and 3 and 4 times a week. If I do not sit in a chair and work hard at writing a term paper and my presentation, it sure makes a long 45 minutes, I assure you, for both of us. I'm in a position that I stand at an intersection that I know 100 needs any day. Any day I wake up, any day I go to bed, I know 100 needs. That's not figurative, that's literal. When you fill out the prayer request this morning, there's a very good chance we'll have 100 this week. I add those to the 16 or 18 voicemail messages I'll have in the morning, or add those to the 20 or 25 email messages, and I do not care. I like what I do, but literally when I get up in the morning, I need to work hard because I love people and I care and I want to do what's right. But I haven't seen the needs of people where they come to a screeching halt. It almost feels a little like the hamster. It feels at times like the treadmill. I've been here 27 years. There are times and seasons that I have handled this really pretty well. There's times and seasons I've handled it very, very poorly. There have been times that literally it got to me. It got so deep. It got so deep that I'm almost paralyzed at times. It's gotten deep at other times. I just have to almost put a shell on for a little bit. There's times I catch myself so irritated just at things in life. The stress of it, my hands begin to shake, and I wake up from 2 and I don't sleep till 5, and there's times and seasons it gets me. There's times and seasons I'm absolutely, this is the best life I ever knew. I would hand it to everybody I ever knew. This is the greatest, single, most wonderful thing there is. What's the difference? I can tell you the difference in those seasons. Unmistakably, without a wobble. When I have 6 days, I work hard, and one day I rest. The work isn't done. The work will never be done, but I drive a stake in the ground and say, this is a rest day. For me, it won't be Sundays. For me, it needs to be Thursdays. But when I drive a stake in the ground and say, Thursday is the day that I take as into my rest unto the Lord, I'm going to tell you there is something in the providence and the provision of God that absolutely changes everything. And when I lose that and do not do that, everybody who's close to me at all can tell it. Am I odd or strange? Well, I may be, but it's not on this issue. Everybody here, God designed you and wired you. Work hard 6 days and one day rest hard. Real, legitimate rest. You see, we live in a more society. I'll tell you what we need. I'll tell you what our family needs. Our family needs more. Boy, if we had more house, more car, more activities, more people we don't let down, more entertainment, more places to go. Boy, if we just had more, we'd be fine. So we live with chronic stress. That chronic stress causes us to have an impaired memory. Our memory isn't too good. We don't remember things sometimes very well. Sometimes my memory isn't really good. I went to the doctor this week. Probably my mistake. I went on the wrong day. I'd taken all their medication the day before. That's kind of an unpleasant trip. It's an impaired memory somewhere. We're tired. We're always tired. Our hearts are damaged. We reduce our ability to have self-discipline. We accelerate the aging process. There was a time that I looked younger than I really am. Everybody was always surprised. Now that I walk up everywhere and they offer me the senior citizens discount. More is about to kill us. We were designed for 6 days you work hard and one day you rest. Why is there a rest in music? Those of you that are musicians, got a music book down here. Why is there a rest? Well, because she's been playing really hard and she got really tired and they put a rest in there. Well, catch your breath, sweetie. I mean, you've been working really hard on that thing. And what's there? A rest is put in music because it draws attention to what just happened or what's about to happen. It puts things in a rhythm that matches other things. A rest is especially designed, though, to cause attention to be drawn to something. Let me tell you, without rest, you can't care about the things you care about. You care about something at an 8. You get tired and you begin to live a pace just repetitious, and you're caring, even though you still care about it, it just gets lived out at a 3. Without a rest, you can't keep your values straight. Everything starts running together. $1,000 items and $100 items and 10 cent items all weigh on you about the same way. They all feel about the same. You can't even sort out how you want to spend your day or prioritize it. You can't keep your values straight. And so you say, God, what do I do with this rest, this rest that you gave to me, which, by the way, in Exodus 23, he says, will refresh you. When are you going to play games with your kids? What's the pattern in your life that caused your kids to say, they put us as values that nothing else has to compete against? When are you going to go for walks with your wife or an old friend? You're going to say 16 to 18 times where you walk out of here, these halls, boy, good to see you. We had to get together sometime. Good to see you. We had to get together sometimes. And even when we do, it's one of those, see you on Tuesday at 11:15. We'll meet you for lunch, and I got to be gone by 5 till 12 because I've got, where's the place and time you say, I know what my values are? When do you go and sit on the porch with an old teacher? When do you go and just sit, and you don't keep looking at your watch while you sit at the nursing home with an old aunt? When do you just go for a long walk on a September or October day? When did you sit down with the Word in your lap and you just read, and you read just long passages, and you just read because you could? This mindless, robotic, repetitive life, it's not made us more grateful. It's not made us kinder. It's not made us better families. It's not made us better neighbors. It's not made us deeper Christians. It's not helped us in any way. Irma Bombeck, just before she died of cancer, wrote a piece. I won't read it to you this morning, but that piece is pretty poignant. She said, if I had known then what I know now, and the piece is entitled, I Wish. And here's Irma Bombeck with a cancer that would claim her life. And it's things like, I wished I had held hands with my husband and gone for a walk more. I wished I would have let him roll down the windows in the car and worried less that it messed up my hair. She just began to write. It's interesting that this passage says that the Sabbath is holy unto the Lord. Unless you have the right view of holy, you might even misinterpret that. Well, that means we have to be at church, and we ought to be dressed up, and we ought to be in... No, no, no. The word holy on this day of rest means set apart for what it's set apart for. That's all the word holy means, is being used what it's meant for. And here's what it's meant for. You drive a stake in the ground and say, I build my whole life around this. My God is able to provide for me in 6 days of labor, 7 days of provisions. And my God will refresh me. You ever had the realization, and sure you have, that what you're calling rest oftentimes isn't rest? Empty calories. I wish there were such things as empty calories. I wouldn't look like this if they were really empty calories. Empty calories are things that give you the calorie count, but they give you no new real nutritional value. When you're told to take a biblical rest, I'm willing to bet there's room for a ball game on TV. There's room for lots of things. But I'd tell you to be pretty ruthless about taking a look at what you're calling. For example, you may say, I'm going home this afternoon. I'm going to rest all afternoon. Can I warn you against a Twinkie rest? I've had times that I was just so exhausted that I went home and I turned the TV on and said, I just needed a night of rest. And I just put the TV on and I've sat back and watched TV most of the night. And the next morning I was every bit as tired as I was before I did. Because my rest was empty calories. It was mindless, but it wasn't rest. I think you're going to have to decide the National Football League and probably some other things, and I'm speaking to the guys on this, but I'm willing to bet that they probably can't schedule your rest for you. They won't do very well. And neither can Frito-Lay design your nutrition for you. Rest. At some point in time, I decide, God, I'll trust you. Here's my challenge. I give you a very straightforward challenge. for 6 weeks, will you try this? I don't care what day, you can be creative. I sort of joke. And by the way, I want to say this again in this. A lot of this series, even things I'm saying even today, have come from a little series entitled the Sinai Code. And so I want to make sure I give credit for this. But I would say the same thing that I heard that's in that little series in the Sinai Code. Those of you that are stay-at-home moms, don't email me. I don't know how to do it in your situation either. I'm serious. I mean, you can back off as a stay-at-home mom. You can reschedule and some things. I understand just to say, hey, kids, you're on your own today. Mom's taking a rest. Probably makes for a really bad Monday, is my guess. I don't know that. But, I mean, stay-at-home moms, you've got some unique situations that I would recognize. And may the Lord bless thee. That's all I know to tell you. In fact, Kevin Klein and Rick Bushnell handle that for us. Please get a hold of them, if you wouldn't mind. Rick Bushnell and Kevin Klein. You're going to have to be creative. I don't know that it'll be the same day every week for people. It may be for you, it's Thursday this week and it's Wednesday the following week. I don't know when it is. But would you do, I ask his favor, for the next 6 weeks, would you say, I will rest? And when you do that rest, would you do your best not to make it an empty calories rest? Would you do your best to make it have substance? Where two things happen. It's what I do to the Lord. God, you're able to take care of me. And at the second thing is, God, I'm able to be refreshed by your love for me. They tell me, I don't know the exact details, but they tell me that even your most modern, most advanced, most technologically advanced, super Boeing airplanes that you ride in, the kind that take you to India and everywhere else, they don't work well, even with all of their avionics and all their navigational stuff, unless they are first of all pulled out on the tarmac and they set. And you have to set them. And they set and they orient themselves. And all of their navigational equipment begins to find true north and magnetic north. And it's just setting. So if you even move it at all, you just take it and move it. Say, I'm going to put it over here for a little while. When you get in it and try to take that plane somewhere, it'll still go. It just doesn't know where it's going to go. And so the one thing you do with even an airplane is just let it set. It'll get oriented in its setting. I don't know about you, but I kind of recognize that. I need where I orient in my setting. Go worship the Lord this week. Take a day off.